For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Catherine Drew. A U.S. submarine has arrived in South Korea amid concerns of another North Korean missile or nuclear test as its army celebrates its 85th founding anniversary. The missile-armed USS Michigan is set to join a group of warships sent to the region by U.S. President Donald Trump. FSN's Kate Fisher reports from Washington.
The U.S. submarine docking in South Korea is a routine event, but in this time of heightened tensions, it has extra significance. In the past, North Korea has marked some key anniversaries with nuclear tests or missile launches, and experts are concerned they could be planning more. North Korea conducted a failed ballistic missile test earlier this month, prompting U.S. Vice President Mike Pence to warn it not to test President Donald Trump. In an unusual move, the entire U.S. Senate has been asked to attend a briefing on North Korea on Wednesday at the White House. Kate Fisher, Washington.
Facebook has condemned and removed a video which showed a Thai man murdering his baby daughter on a Facebook Live video before taking his own life. The 21-year-old man hanged his daughter in a hotel on the island of Phuket before he could be apprehended by police. Facebook said there was no place for such content on its service. It comes as the social network giant was criticized for not being quick enough to respond when an American man posted the video of himself killing a 74-year-old man in Cleveland, Ohio. Facebook had promised to review its processes following that incident. Ivanka Trump has been booed by an audience in Berlin after calling her father, U.S. President Donald Trump, a champion of supporting families. The younger Trump was taking part in a panel discussion with German Chancellor Angela Merkel on women entrepreneurs. FSN's Iris Spitzer has more from Berlin.
Ivanka Trump was defending what she characterized as her father's support of paid family leave. But some audience members groaned at her characterization of the U.S. president as a champion of families. She was attending the W20 summit at the invitation of German Chancellor Angela Merkel, which is an event promoting equal rights for women and part of this year's G20 summit in Germany. President Trump has faced criticism over his attitude towards women, especially after a video of him making obscene remarks was released during the presidential campaign.
At least 16 people have drowned in the latest incident of the sinking of a boat carrying refugees between Turkey and Greece. A number of bodies, including those of two children, have been recovered near the Greek island of Lesbos. Survivors say around 25 people from Cameroon and the Democratic Republic of Congo were on board. The number of migrants drowning in the water has fallen since March of last year, when Turkey agreed a deal with the EU to stop people heading to Europe. From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you very much, Catherine Drew. Welcome to the programme. It is the 25th of April 2017, Tuesday's programme. Saw a tweet from George Galloway short time ago saying he's been campaigning in Gorton in four seasons. It's been like that today. We've had every weather known to man or to woman. We've had hailstones, we've had thunder, we've had rain. And we've had bright sunshine, as only Manchester can. You can tweet me, it's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. The email seems to have been fixed, so it's richie@richieallen.co.uk is my email address.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. The Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Now, Tina Louise Rothery joins me this hour. First time she's been on for a while. Terrific lady, environmental activist, campaigner, human rights campaigner, and former Green Party candidate. Fracking is deadly serious. It's deadly. It's going on in a neighbourhood near you or in your neighbourhood, and there is little or no coverage of it on national media. None. And it will not get any... Well, I shouldn't say it won't get any. I can't be sure of that. But the media will not be covering it in the run-up to this general election in June. Tina Rothery joins me this hour. And in the second hour, I'll be joined by Bill Marchant. Now, Bill and his wife, Pat, believe their daughter, Jodie, was severely brain damaged by a vaccine that they didn't consent to. They're fighting for justice for her, for Jodie, to raise awareness of the dangers of vaccination and to take a legal case. This is very, very serious as well. I want to give a shout out to Christina England, the terrific journalist and author who's been on this programme several times. Christina put me on to this story. I will tweet a link to her story within this programme tonight. I will do that. I won't forget to do it. Live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, Alternate Current Radio, and of course TuneIn Radio as well. Do check out richieallen.co.uk. Heard from David today. He said he did a terrific interview with a national television station in Belgrade. He then popped over the border to Bosnia, where he did another interview, telling me that there's a huge interest in the independent media and in his own work, certainly in Eastern Europe. Terrific times. He's in Belgrade in Serbia this Saturday. To find out more about the Worldwide Wake Up Tour, you need only go to theworldwidewakeup.com. 6 minutes past the hour. Hello to Sean Bluer, great friend of mine, teacher and union delegate here in this great city. Look forward to hearing from Sean on the programme again real soon. Nice to know she's listening. Interview with Piers Corbyn yesterday caused a bit of a storm, not in terms of controversy. A lot of opinions on it, a lot of opinions on what Piers said, on what I said to him, how it was put to him, his responses to it. If you missed any of that fascinating exchange, the interview is now on YouTube. Go to youtube.com, look for The Richie Allen Show. So then, as usual, let's have a quick roundup of the news. The Labour Party, in the guise of Keir Starmer, the Brexit shadow Brexit secretary, has said it would scrap Theresa May's Brexit plans and it would unilaterally guarantee the rights of EU residents before talks start, that is, if Labour wins power. He said he accepted the UK was leaving, but Shadow Brexit Secretary Sir Keir Starmer said Labour wanted a deal which prioritises jobs and workers' rights. This drives me mad. This nonsense that workers would depend on the European Union to secure their rights. Workers of the world, unite and take over. Secure your own rights. Tired of this garbage. Oh, if we leave the European Union, we won't have workers' rights. Demand them. Get up off your arses in your own country and do something about your rights. Anyway. Calm down. He said migration rules had to change, did Starmer. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll play you some of what he said today. Just a wee snippet. Here it is.
It is shameful that the Prime Minister rejected repeated attempts by Labour to resolve this issue before Article 50 was triggered. As a result, 3 million EU nationals have suffered unnecessary uncertainty, as well, of course, as the 1.2 million UK citizens living in the EU. On day one of a Labour government, we will immediately guarantee that all EU nationals currently living in the UK will see no change in their legal status as a result of Brexit. Day one, big commitment.
Nonsense, that poppycock. I'm going to get very posh and Eton educated. I'm going to start using those types of words. Poppycock. There can be no membership of the single market for a nation that blocks freedom of movement. The two are mutually exclusive, yeah? Can I say that? You can't have one without the other. He knows this. Simple as that. You can't do this and do that and we'll amend the freedom of movement and we'll gain access to the single market. No, you can't. To get access to the single market, you must accept freedom of movement. The people of this country said no to that. Absolutely rubber stamped it. That was why people voted. No, enough of that. And do I need to mention again? I suppose I do. You're probably sick of hearing it, but this is a Brexit election. The United Kingdom has not benefited as a member of the European Union for the last 40 years. It never increased its trade with the EU as a percentage of its overall trade. It never did, ever. That's a fact. Both sides accept that. The European Union sells much more to the United Kingdom than the United Kingdom sells to the European Union. Richie, I've said this 500 times, I'm switching over. I know I did, but I'm going to keep saying it. There will be no tariffs imposed by EU countries because the UK would reciprocate. And it would hurt them far more than it would hurt the UK. And as for EU citizens, there are 3 million EU citizens here. There are 1.2 million UK citizens in the Eurozone. The European Union will be desperate to get an agreement that leaves those people alone. Now, however, Sky News ran a poll today, their own poll. They said it's exclusive. Sky News poll. And Sky says their poll shows that people don't want the EU citizens living here to get any guarantees. Here's Sky News.
Harry Carr's here. Why? Well, an exclusive Sky data poll suggesting the majority of British people oppose a unilateral guarantee for EU citizens living in the UK to be able to remain in the country after Brexit. That's at odds with Labour's promise to make such a guarantee on their first day in office if they win the election. Harry is here, as I said, our Sky data head. Tell me more about what your surveys found.
So the majority of people oppose basically what the Labour Brexit secretary in waiting said today. So 55% would either like what the Conservatives have suggested, which is a reciprocal deal. So wait for the EU to guarantee that UK citizens who are in other EU countries can stay before we make the same guarantee for EU citizens who are here already. Another 11% on top of that would like EU citizens to not get any guarantee at all, even were the EU to guarantee UK right to remain.
Okay.
And 29% actually support it. So the vast majority, or certainly more than half, do not like that idea. But in terms of Brexit generally, the Conservatives also not that popular. So 42% of people, I think we'll see in a moment, think that Brexit, they're doing a bad job of negotiating Brexit. 25% think they're doing a good job.
Piffle! What a load of old piffle. That's nonsense by Sky, that. That isn't scientific. That is actually propaganda. The majority of people oppose guaranteeing the rights of EU nationals here, says Sky News. Now, I bet you if you did that poll properly, most people you spoke with would say, stop the open door policy immediately. But for those here paying taxes and national insurance for many years with roots in the country, let them be. Let them be. That's my experience anyway. As for the poll saying that the government are doing a bad job on Brexit, 42% allegedly saying the government is doing a bad job negotiating. Let me just remind you, there hasn't been any negotiating yet for them to be doing a bad job on it. Now, this is all pro-EU propaganda by Rupert Murdoch and Sky News. All these papers carry the same nonsense. Now listen, don't even start with me today. I have no truck with the paedophile-protecting, human rights-abusing Tories. But let's get real here. There's been no negotiations. They were due to start around about the time that the election will take place, by the way. So that was Sky News and undoubtedly a fake opinion poll today. Tosh, it's almost criminal that, I would say. And I wonder, is there any recourse for a member of the public to try and get to the bottom of how Sky conducted their poll? Because it smells to me, but that's another thing. Now, a story we've covered quite a bit in the last couple of days. I spoke about it extensively on Sunday View, and Mike Rivero joined me to talk about it yesterday. Oxford University and microaggression. Yeah, Oxford University saying that asking someone where they come from or not looking them in the eye could be racist. Have a listen to Oxford graduate George Barda. He's speaking to RT and he's justifying the stance that Oxford University has taken.
Well, George, it's interesting, isn't it? Because actually saying this is casual racism, does that imply actually that it's none of it, of course, intentional? And are they perhaps looking for problems that don't really exist?
To clarify, the problem is not asking somebody where they're from. The problem is asking somebody where they are originally from. So you say to somebody, where are you from? And they say, I'm British. And you go, no, but where are you originally from? Because, you know, somebody might have a different skin colour.
Sure.
And you know, I think this is... It's a really sort of mountain out of a molehill stuff. I think, you know, if you are an older white man, for instance, that is, you know, and I spent a bit of time at Oxford. I happened to go to, you know, boarding schools myself that were very sort of white and traditional, where people were not used to interacting with people of different ethnic minorities. And, you know, these things are not being pulled out of the sky. You can imagine if you're in a tutorial with sort of three white people and somebody, a non-white person, and the teacher seems much more comfortable interacting directly with the white people and then seems to be sort of looking at the floor with the non-white person, then that, you know, this is not about demonising the academics. It's just about saying we are complex beings that react in ways that we're not necessarily in control of towards people that we think of as different.
We are complex beings and we react in ways that we're not in control of to people that we see as different. What an idiot. To clarify, Barda said mountain out of a molehill, but he wasn't saying that Oxford University are making a mountain out of a molehill. He was saying that those of us who are criticising Oxford for this nonsense are making a big deal of something that is harmless. It isn't harmless. What a cretin. He just flushed his parents' money down the toilet. The 5 years he spent at Oxford probably cost his parents two or three remortgages. And the best he can come out with is, we react in complex ways and we're not necessarily in control of our reactions when we're dealing with people we see as different. What a twat. Muppet. And the RT guy is completely gormless. The presenter just sits there. Yeah. Tell me more, George. Lunatic. Speaking of RT, big story on RT today. Very interesting story, this. Thought you might like this. The President of the Parliamentary Assembly of Europe, PACE. Now, I bet you never heard of PACE, did you? Well, I didn't either. I'll make a confession. The President of the Parliamentary Assembly of Europe, PACE, is a guy called Pedro Agramunt, Spanish guy. And he's landed in sticky water in hot water after meeting with the president of Syria, Bashar al-Assad. His European counterparts are not at all impressed that he went to meet with Bashar. Polly Boyko for RT has the story. Have a listen.
Just so you understand what PACE is, it's the Parliament for the Council of Europe. That's an international organisation which is dedicated to upholding human rights. So it's not the European Union. Now, Agramunt is now in big trouble with his fellow PACE members. They've actually called for his impeachment as president, all because of this trip to Syria that he's made. Now, he says he was there not as the president of PACE, but rather in his capacity as a Spanish lawmaker. It was a joint visit with some Russian politicians, also politicians from across Europe, a number of countries. And while they were there, they met with the Syrian president, Bashar al-Assad. And this trip has had somewhat of a bombshell effect on the PACE assembly, especially some of the delegates there. And during the session today, they were calling for his impeachment. That's actually... his fate is being decided as we speak. And so Agramunt, the president, I remind you, issued an apology. Take a listen.
This visit was a mistake, and I realised this after having seen the consequences. Since the beginning of my mandate, I have made 50 official visits, and no questions were raised about these.
Yeah. I've made plenty of official visits, 50 in fact. There were no complaints about any of those. Yeah, and RT making the point subtly, quite rightly, that they don't want anybody popping over to Syria to have a cup of tea with Bashar al-Assad, because heaven forbid they find out that what they are being told about Bashar and Syria by the Western media, the corporate controlled Western media, is completely untrue. So don't go over there. And as a lesson to anybody else who's thinking about going to Syria, We're going to destroy your career. It is 19 minutes past the hour. This is the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, alternatecurrentradio.com and TuneIn Radio as well. Very quick break, back with plenty more. Tina Rothery has just said hello there online. She'll be with me in a couple of minutes. Great value, top woman, back in a minute.
Virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
We intend to show everyone the real reason children are being removed at an alarming rate.
No, this is awful.
The baby's not being seen by the doctor or nothing.
They are psychopathic.
They have got the legal right to kill children now, because that's what they do.
Traffic 2, available now at premiumonpictures.co.uk.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbayerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com.
It is 21 and a half minutes past the hour. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com, and this is the Lighthouse family. Always good to be with you. Lovely sunny evening after all the weather in Manchester. Tina Louise Rothery joins me in a minute. Looking forward to chatting with her. Keep the tweets coming in to at Richie Allen Show.
It's true, can't blue, I can share your situation. Been hold on our emotions, they will only make us cry. And you go, I know, but you know.
Lighthouse family, Ocean Drive on the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. 24 minutes past the hour. A lot of tweets coming in to follow the Twitter feed and what's being said to me. Simply go to twitter.com where it says search Twitter, put Richie Allen Show, all one word, press enter. You will see what is being tweeted to me and by whom. And you can interact there and have your own arguments amongst yourselves. Nothing wrong with that. Let's get on with the show. Our first guest is no stranger to you. Wonderful woman, terrific environmental activist, human rights activist, great campaigner, terrifically eloquent and passionate, and former candidate for the Green Party. She might tell us, run again for the Greens. Fracking is massive. It is a massive, massive issue. It gets scant coverage in the media here in the UK or anywhere else. And my fear is, and I'm sure it's her fear as well, that this election cycle is going to focus predominantly on the European Union to the detriment of issues like this, but also social justice issues as well. Let's welcome back to the programme our friend Tina Louise Rothery. Tina, welcome back.
Evening, Richie. You know, one day I'll live up to all those amazing intros you give me. Thank you.
You're one of the, you know, there are not very many people that I find sincere and genuine and do what they do for the betterment of other people and not for their own agenda or profile. You're one of the few people. You're an amazing woman. So I mean that. What's going on?
We live in interesting times, don't we?
We live in interesting times, Tina. And my first question was going to be, and I'm going to get out of the way, the floor is yours. What's happening with fracking right now in this country? Is it going on? Is it going on big style? Where is it happening? What about the activism standing against it? What is happening to those people? Over to you. What's going on?
Okay, so it's all getting a bit hairy at the moment. We're on day 80 of protest. They came on January 5th with the equipment. Originally, before that, just to do a quick recap for listeners who haven't been keeping up with fracking, you know, it's a nightmare thing to keep up with. It's been 6 years since they first and only time they fracked in the UK in 2011 in Blackpool that led to 58 seismic events resulting in two, you know, actual felt earthquakes. A moratorium was put in place till December 2012. And then we fought them every step of the way since then. The moratorium was sadly lifted. And then they were told they could go ahead by the government. Here in Lancashire, where Quadrilla did the very first test, burst frack, they challenged us for another license for four wells. And we put up a heck of a fight. There's a lot of good, strong campaigners here. A really joined up community of residents. And they fought back, along with the rest of the anti-fracking community across the UK. And we convinced our council, and the council did the work over 18 months and rejected the plan. They said no to the fracking site. And then Sajid Javid in the Conservative Party was given the ability to overrule our decision. And he did that. So in a nutshell, we're having this forced on us, an unwilling community who they said no, our council said no, ridiculous numbers of petitions and objections said no, and the Westminster has decided they're still going to do it to us anyway. So January 5th was the first we knew that they were coming, and they came, and they've been working on the site for 80 working days since. And for every one of those working days, we protested at the site. We have good days where there are hordes of us, and we get anything from, you know, a good few hundred people. We've had demonstrations of over 1,000. But your average day, you know, people have lives trying to keep this up 9 to 5. Well, beyond 9 to 5, Monday to Friday has been quite hellish. But as I say, day 80, we've had lock-ons, delays. We know we put them behind schedule by 3 months because originally the drill was supposed to come in March and it's now not coming in theory till June. So that's where we're at currently. Policing has gone quite crazy. We're on maximum, honestly. Today there were 3 arrests, just honestly, nothing at all. We're being strongly handled by the police. The police are being used as runners and escorts for the trucks as they come in. Up until about 2 weeks ago, the maximum number of trucks in on any one day was about 10, and we know they needed 50 a day to get up to speed. And then just the last 3 or 4 days, last 2 weeks, I'd say, they've been hammering them in, convoys of 10 at a time. We can't get close. We're just pushed out of the way. The policing's 2-3 to 1, you know, and they're just lined up all over the place. You know, people have been dragged and hurt. And it's a messy, messy place to protest. It's on a major road, a major ambulance thoroughfare. And it's just, honestly, it's chaotic and exhausting and draining. But you're uplifted by the people you share time with.
And you turn up there. And you've turned up there, all of you, for 80 days in a row. This thing of the police giving escorts. First of all, remind us the names of the big companies involved. You know, Quadrilla and these companies. Tell our listeners who the companies are.
Quadrilla are the gas and oil exploration company that's working here. But throughout the UK, there's 65% of our country is up and available for fracking. You know, we're up for sale. And you've got companies like iGas, INEOS, Raithlin. There's countless companies actually operating. So, but the easiest thing for listeners to do, if you think it's coming to your area, and I can pretty well guarantee it's planned to, and that even if it doesn't come to your area, sadly, the air and water quality doesn't have a border. So it's worth just going online, type in your town or your county, and then followed by the words frack free, and you will find a local group. I can almost assure you of that. You know, we have groups throughout the country. We started in 2011 with three groups. We're just under 500 groups across the country now. So there's always somewhere to go. And if you can't find a local group, Friends of the Earth, Greenpeace, Green Party, all of those are standing with us, as are most of the unions except the GMB. And we now have it that every party except the Conservatives has said no to fracking.
Except the Tories.
Corbyn declared he would ban it if he was in power.
Corbyn said he would ban it. That's right. It's important to mention that. Now tell me this. We've heard rumours. Now, like you, we don't deal in lies and innuendo, so we don't make statements that we can't back up. I can't verify this, but I've been told by somebody whom isn't a lawyer that they suspect, again, they can't prove, but they suspect off-duty police officers are putting their uniforms on and they're being paid by these companies. Now, I don't know how true that is. Is that something you've heard? Do you suspect that?
We're in a real pickle at the moment because the policing bill is more than our council can stand. Our council spent over 70 grand on 18 months worth of research into the planning that they eventually rejected. And you can imagine what that says to every other council in the country, which is you can spend 70 grand, 18 months and exhaust your councillors to death on this. And even if you come to the wise conclusion and say no, we can still overthrow you. So what does it matter? So any council is going to go, what is the point in saying no? Now, with the policing, we think that's having a slightly better effect is each council is now witnessing the huge cost of policing these operations. So that, yeah, they could say, let the planning go through and get away with not having to spend money on examining it. But the counter is, if you get it and you've got community fight back, and you will have, the cost of your policing is going to be enormous.
Hang on a second, Tina. This is massive, this, and this will be brand new. This will be news for many of our listeners. So the council picks up the tab for the massive energy company. The council does. Do you know, I'm just going to make this point. In this great city, there are two very famous football teams. When they play a game of football, they must pay for the policing of it. This is insane, Tina.
Absolutely. What we've asked for, so that there's no bias, is that how it works with football is that the football teams, you know, depending on the size of them, pay into a central fund, don't they, that contributes to policing. So it isn't like Man U or anyone paying directly to that police force because that would infer a relationship. Here, we believe also that if there is an industry coming, and particularly if planning has formally been rejected, then it would certainly be down to that industry or certainly Westminster inflicting on that reluctant community to pick up the cost. There should be some way that we can take this burden off our council. Because, you know, every time I arrive up there, I live stream on Facebook. My Facebook page is open, so you can see most of the stuff on there. And lots of live streamers. We try to get everywhere for every arrest. We try to get in and cover each thing. But also the interviews at the roadside. And the cost, well, you know, and you asked about, you know, the idea of, like, policing being paid for by them. Well, I think there's going to be some issues with that at some point. But as to right now, well, a lot of the policing we do actually recognize whether they're getting additional for being on duty when they shouldn't have been. I don't know. I don't understand how that works. But I asked a question today of File Police or Lancashire Police if any of the officers feel a moral discomfort with the job they're being asked to do. I mean, don't forget their day primarily involves dragging old ladies across a road. and pushing us out of the way. Yeah. We have many disabled people too, one of whom was pushed out of his wheelchair the other day. I asked if they feel morally uncomfortable with this. Can they say no? Because I think you have that with the armed forces, that if you won't find it, it doesn't, you're not happy with what you're being asked to do. And he said, well, anyone on my team can say no. I said, yeah, but you're a culture that if they say no, then all of a sudden they're not living up to peer pressure. So, you know, we find that what they're putting them through, it's an abuse of our police force. Our police force is supposed to be there to prevent crime, not to stop humans defending their children and facilitate a whopping great industry. You know, we're so lucky we don't have TTIP yet, because this is exactly what it looks like.
Absolutely.
You know? Look at those trade agreements.
So absolutely, 100%. So you have a situation where the council base for the policing, Mark Morrison on Twitter is pointing out that the council will also pay for the cleanup of all the crap left behind by private companies. So let's just pretend for a minute that fracking is safe. It isn't, by the way, dear listener. It destroys the land. It poisons the water. Completely compromises the air quality. It's a terrible thing. Let's pretend it's all fine. What's in it for the council, Tina?
Well, you know, we're going to get £100,000 kickback in theory. But you see, here's the catch on that one too. You know, the big companies were negotiating with the government on how to soften and sweeten the deal so they could bribe communities. So like, oh, we're going to give you $100,000 and then we're going to give you a percentage of everything we take out of the ground. That'll go straight into the community. And we're like, well, A, we don't trust that process. B, $100,000 will never cover it. C, what we've asked for all along, the only thing we want, no one's looking for gain, is a bond. If you are that bloody confident that this is great, give us a whopping great bond to cover the cleanup, and they will not do it. So that's their confidence out the window. So what do the councils get out of it? Absolutely nothing. Because, you know, when they talk about bringing employment to the area, a five-year cross-party study in the shale gas region in Australia that rejected it said, because for every 10 jobs you bring us in fracking, we lose 18 in agriculture.
And
that's just on the job front. I mean, there's so much more. And also the job front, you bring in a bunch of professionals from abroad at the drill stage, really important, highly professional people. Once you've done that and your gas is flowing, then you've got a few part-time menial staff, security, just to keep it going and just to keep it, you know, topping up the tankers. Then it goes back to heavy industrial again when they do another frack. And another frack, you know, each of these wells gets fracked over and over, but then it's left to run once it's been fracked, if you see what I mean.
Can I just make a quick, I'm going to put something to you. Tell me if any of this is wrong. So far, now you and I have spoken many times on this, I'm not being disingenuous, but we don't talk about this enough on this program. You know, and we don't, and we should speak more about it. So here's the scenario, right? We're, through the work of you and others, we've learned that a big energy company comes into an area like Lancashire, like Blackpool, anywhere else in the country. They subvert democracy and they begin drilling and putting all those poisons into the ground to extract shale gas. They do that and the policing bill for this is covered by the local council. The policing bill is covered by the local council. Any cleanup is covered by the local council. Basically, people paying council tax are actually paying for something that they don't want and that was rejected legally, because I'm sure council tax bills have increased. They've increased 2-3% year on year in most places in the country. So this is the absolutely lunatic scenario that I see, Tina.
Absolutely, and you sum it up exactly what it is. If you describe this to people,
they wouldn't believe you.
They would, well, don't be ridiculous. They can't possibly do that. And yet every day we live that. You know, yesterday I, on one of the live streams, I talked to one of the ladies at the side of the road who's been there for nearly every one of the same 80 days I have. And she was, I asked her what was her life before this, because, you know, you don't always have time for the personal chats. She was like, oh no, I would never have called a policeman a thug. I mean, this woman's in her 70s, a local retired lady. I would never have called a policeman a thug. She said, I thought I was believing what was in the news. And again, it's a gift though, Richie. It's a gift. Because when you speak to someone like that, there is no other route to have opened anyone's eyes to the myth and the lie and the fabrication that is our democracy, because it's not a bloody democracy, it's a fraud. that we actually don't have a say in, and we are manipulated. And it's, but you know what, to tell people, it's like, to me, and I said it the other day, fracking explains Occupy in ways that we couldn't from a tent, because it's a symptom of everything that is wrong. So when people in a regular community suddenly realize, though, that their air and water is threatened, and that means their kids' health is threatened, and that's the biggest pull, then everyone in that community who understands the process will then step up. And these are non-activists. The anti-fracking movement, I'd say, is 80% non-activists, but they have become so. But along the way, here's what the journey does, and how this woman explained too, is now everything she's ever read or listened to on the news is suddenly in question, because she looks at the news coverage of this and realizes it's lies and fabrication and manipulation. She also then begins to wonder about all of those reports we've read that are scientific reports, and then we realize they're paid for by industry, yeah, and they're only allowed to give you teeny fractions of the truth shaped the way they want you to hear it, but not the big picture. So now she's lost faith in the media, academia, any sense of democracy. She's realized that her counselors are basically impotent. They're given no power. Her MP works for a party, not for her. And then you stand there with your placard in your 70s and wonder, where the hell did I ever get heard? And how do I be heard now at the time I most need it? And just when you turn to your cop, he shoves you across the road. And that's the final straw. I see people so emotional with this. You know, it breaks people down. It's terrible, because it's okay for maybe you and like, I've only been in this since 2011. I'm still shocked constantly. But we come to this with a gradual realization you're okay. But when you are slap bang in the center of it for the first time and literally everything becomes obvious, then it is shattering for your life view, your worldview, and how you think you've lived your life all along.
Do you know the problem we have? And you, you're great, because you never had a problem coming on this program, despite the fact that there would be things I would believe that you wouldn't have any truck with. But yeah, that's the wonderful thing about you. And I've always said this, it's why I invite politicians on, and a lot of them do come on, and financiers and economists who disagree do come on, and I like that. And we invite them on. I've been saying since 2003, 2004, we get to choose between whichever city you're living in this country, between multimillionaires whom are compromised by their ties to big finance, in other words, to banks or central banks, or ties to global business and global corporations. What we have is, and it's not a melodramatic statement, we have the definition of fascism. That's what we live in. And I nearly went insane in the mid-2000s, having come from mainstream media and perpetuated all the bullshit that you just described there and lied to people about things. We live in a fascist state. And I spoke to Piers Corbyn last night for a bit, and I like Piers, and I like a lot of the things that Jeremy Corbyn has done over the years. But I got it through to Piers, and I think Piers accepted it at the end of the conversation. The system is set up. If you parachute a Tina Louise Rothery, Jeremy Corbyn, Galloway, I could name a few more people, into MP slots at Westminster, because of the way the system is set up, it won't matter a damn. Sure, Tina Louise Rothery will do the right thing, and she will say what needs to be said when she gets her opportunities, limited as they are in Westminster. Yeah. But because of the way the system is set up, forget about it. Doesn't matter. Yeah, that's the tragedy.
I think one of the things that you and I probably agreed on, but I've had to change my view on, is the point of voting. Because to me, it looks like this, and it's the only way I can summarize it, is if I live in a town and I've got three shops and they run for shop of the year and they all suck, they're all useless, I don't see the point in voting and encouraging them to carry on. However, if there was a line that said, and the winning shop will dictate all the prices and the type of produce that way will be sold by all of them, then I would be fearful of who voted, because they might actually end up rigging the system so that in the end, someone's got the power to dictate what I'm allowed to buy and how much I spend. So I do not believe our system of voting is in the least way fair. I ran for the first time in my life in politics against George Osborne in 2015. And the reason I did it was, I mean, you know, you can't win in Tatton as a Green, or as anyone really, it's so rigged. But I needed to see the process, to feel the process, to understand how it worked, and to look George Osborne in the eye. And I tell you what, Richie, sometimes I think they paint a picture that makes it all look much more powerful than it actually is. Because sometimes when you prod the human, you realize they're quite fallible and that there are holes and little ways to move. I think that the way I look at it now is that if you consider the government is the heart of the disease at the system, but in some way has been virtually, it's kind of like a zombie. It's been infested with industry lobbyists who became politicians, who went back to industry, who became politicians. And it's this revolving door between the two things. And the people have got less and less important. But for anything so full of bad and evil and wrong, you need to pour in the good stuff to balance, to dilute. And that is the least we can try to do. Then it is every arena needs activisms, every arena activists, and every arena needs action. And so we should be trying to impact, even if it looks pointless, bugger it, try. To me, it would be like saying, well, you know, there's a gun to my head, I'm not going to bother ducking. I will still do everything in my power to avoid what looks inevitable. You will still fight to the end. And I believe that we should fight in academic worlds, in political worlds, at the side of roads for 80 days, anywhere you can to go infest yourself as an informed, truthful, good person. Get the hell in there and do it, because at some point it will impact.
With
this election, you know, I think we should look at this as the election that is, don't even call it an election. It is the one opportunity to get the Conservatives' hands off of the levers of control, because they have a tight grip. They're about to change the boundaries. The voting public consists of a lot of older conservative people. Young people despondent, disparaged. They see nothing that is for them. And it's understandable. That means those few people who are voting conservative. I mean, only 26% of the voting public got this government in. Just 26% of people who were able to vote chose Tory. And yet we got them. So we have to get in there and make sure that something that small could not make an impact that big. And Jeremy Corbyn, I believe, can do this, or is the best hope we have. I may or I'm deciding, and it's not official, run as a Green, but only if it wouldn't split the vote. To me, the aim of this election is to get the Tories out. That's the aim, the sole aim. Because for me personally as well, and certainly for the anti-fracking movement, we know that Labour has declared it will ban fracking. Lib Dems have made enough public comments saying they don't want fracking for us to hold them to account. Green Party, obviously, they were basically anti-fracking before anyone had heard of fracking, because they already realised you can't keep polluting planets. You can't keep pouring toxins into communities and expect us to be able to suck it up and live on without ill health. You know, so I still think it's an arena we've got to challenge. Once we can get control or enough good people to balance it, we can seek to change the system. But, you know, what happens if we all just overrun Parliament and we have this mass revolution and we throw them all out? Then what? Where are
then
we standing?
What is happening? I hear this all the time. I'm going to do a very quick recap. Tina Louise Rothery is on the line, former Green Party candidate in Tatton, as she said, human rights activist, environmental activist, great lady. She's on the line to us now. We got her for another 8 to 10 minutes. Time is absolutely flying by.
Doesn't it fly?
Listen, the last thing I'm going to say, because I had my say on this last night, and I'll never vote in a general election. And this, I made this analogy before, and it was childish. And then somebody came back to me and said, actually, it wasn't a bad analogy at all if you think about it. I look at the Wes Craven horror film about Freddy Krueger. And I look at the end of it, the first film, a terrific horror film. I look at the end of it. And I think even as a young man, I saw Freddie as an analogy for the system, for the horrors of the system, the oppression. Now, I don't know if that's what he was doing with that character, but that's what I felt anyway. And Heather Langenkamp, who played the heroine, Nancy, in the end, she turns her back on him. And she says, you've only had power because I gave it to you, because I believed in you, and because I was terrified of you. And I think the system depends on us every 4 years believing in somebody, believing in man or some woman. And eventually, Jeremy gets in. And then all the Blairites and all the other spineless cowards in the party block anything he wants to do on fracking or anything else. And I'm not trying to depress you. And then I say to people, so are you finally going to learn now, or are we going to have this lunacy again in 5 years' time with another hero that the system has served up to you? And that's where I am on it, Tina, you know?
I think your analogy is perfect. I totally get it, and I totally understand it and relate to it. My only issue is I can turn my back on the system, but the bastard is still running my hospital.
Yeah.
And it's still looking after my kids' education. And it's still, in theory, holding or withholding money from elderly people. We have to get control back into the hands of better people, because just snatching it away doesn't solve it. Ignoring it doesn't solve it. I totally get you. I am on totally the same page. The only reason I joined the Green Party is on the first page of the introduction that I read, it said, we seek to get into the system in order to change it. And that's exactly what resonated with me. I was like, okay, that's it. I mean, whether or not they do or don't, I mean, it's not the point. The point is I have to keep on rowing in the direction of better in all the areas of my life that I can impact.
I think you're doing better, Tina. See, I think you're actually the answer. Ironically, you are the answer. Because what you're doing with all those men and women, those noble men and women, going up there every single day of the week to stand in the way of those people, is the answer. Both of us are right. You in what you do, me in what I say. The problem is we don't have the numbers, Tina. It's the numbers. You see, I had an issue with Manchester City Council last year. Paid council tax every single month since we arrived back in this city. Just before this programme was launched, I had a 7 or 8 week period where I was unemployed. After spending fortunes in national insurance, I said, to hell with it, I'm going to have some job seekers allowance for a few weeks. So I took some, knowing that it was only going to be a few weeks. In the meantime, they said, right, so you get a deduction on your council tax. Lovely, says I. Happy days, job done. Didn't think anything about it. A year later, I was back working. I told them when I was working, said, right, I need to start paying the full bill again. Paid the full bill again. They came to me a year later. They said, you know what? We gave you too much discount back then about a year ago. We just realised that. And you owe us £300. So my second word was off. And I said, under no circumstances, you might as well sell me a sandwich in a corner shop. And as I've eaten half of it, come and tell me, oh, I should have charged you £1.99 instead of £1.50. Well, that's not my problem. Anyway, the tyrants came after me. They sent bailiffs. I got Sir Gerald Kaufman, who died some weeks ago, the former Gorton MP, to write to them. He wrote them letters saying they were tyrannical, they were disgusting, they were out of order, this is an absolute outrage, and still they came. Now, of course, I know the law. I know what these people can do, and I'm a big, tough, baldy, muppet Irishman. So I said, listen, you can knock on the door as many times as you want, you're never getting the money.
Yeah.
So they went away.
Yeah.
That's what they do because they're cowards. They went away.
That's what I mean. Is sometimes you can just shatter them by calling them out and making them realize. Like sometimes, like for us, our wins are hearts and minds at the side of that road. You know, every those police see us doing what we do, and that is why I ask them the moral question. There are women there with children who live in my community who must understand that we would not put our lives through this if it weren't for the health of our children being at risk. And I want to create the moral dilemma for people because they should feel that. And, you know, I remember, you know, we gave evidence in the House of Lords in 2012. And when I went in, I was quite nervous. You know, it was an uncomfortable situation. It's the most oppressive building I've ever been in my life. And probably the darkest thing I ever felt like I was ever involved in. It was horrible. And so there was this horseshoe of 12 lords. And
because you were surrounded by paedophiles, that's why.
Yeah, you know, it wouldn't surprise me. And at the end of it, you know, it was when we walked away, I felt I was the luckier person, you know, because I didn't feel a moral core in that building anywhere. I just felt nothing but a determination to drive through this agenda. And it was at that point that the last light of democracy went out of me. I was still holding out some hope I could find something in there that I could work with, but you just couldn't. And then you realize, no, it is screwed. It is really screwed in that building. And therefore, and the commons, you know, if you're a good guy and you get in, well, unless you make compromises, you don't raise to the top. But I think there are some people who go in there enough, who go with good intent. You look at Mari Black. I like to listen to her. You know, have you heard her?
I have. I've heard her speak. Yeah.
I find she speaks raw truths a lot. And it's that raw, honest openness that you really want to get from people. And that comes from speaking from the core. And in the House of Lords, they said to me, there's no need to be emotional. I thought, wow, if you take emotion out of this, I think that's what the economy is. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We need emotion in society. We need to make time to feel outrage. We need to make time for that. And we can't, because we're working just to keep a roof above our heads, just to feed the kids. We are kept so busy or poverty stricken or both. And even the processes to access services that we need keep us tied in knots when you know your call is important to someone on hour 18.
We are the only species on planet Earth that has to pay a fellow member of our species for the right to live. That is the insanity of the world we live in. And this isn't communism or some sort of Marxism. It's the absolute truth. It is lunacy. Just a quick... Go on, team.
The system needs more than an overhaul. If you came into being just now and you said, how will we organize our shared resources as a community, as a country? You would never in a million years design what we have. So let's pretend we don't have that and start looking at how would we design what would actually work. And I believe it's just employees and contracts and getting jobs done with experienced people in health and education, rather than people who work with egos and self-serving for their own future goals and, you know, spending 5 years fighting for their job rather than for what we need.
We have people in jail today for crimes they shouldn't be in jail for. And you mentioned George Osborne earlier on. There's a man, there's a man who sold public assets to foreign investors for far less than they were actually worth. He should be in prison for the rest of his life. I'm talking about, of course, the UK stake in Eurostar, which that bastard sold for pennies on the pound, even though he was warned that because of new routes opening up around Europe in the next 15 years, the actual stakeholding held by the British people would treble or quadruple in terms of its monetary value. That is the definition of fraud. If you did it, Tina, if you were working for Sainsbury's and you did that, or I did it, we'd be in prison. This is the tyranny we live in.
Yeah, but you know, the good thing on the fraud subject is, as soon as Theresa May called that election, I thought, aha, that's because of the fraud. You've got a 12 majority, and you're going to have investigations by police forces for 20 MPs. Right. Those 20 MPs would cause 20 by-elections, and she would lose her majority. This is called because she has to do it, not because she wants to. And I think a lot of the media sell this whole Labour is weak, whereas really, if you glanced over at the Conservative Party, they're in complete disarray. There are two or three of those MPs spilling it out on Twitter saying, you know, hey, I'm not going to be the scapegoat, go to jail and take the hit for this one. It was Conservative Party headquarters that made us have all that extra funding or brought the battle bus. So I think it's going to be, and I also think it's worth remembering, Richie, that if you look back and you think, would we have imagined Trump or Brexit? Well, probably not. A lot of people are doing the thing that I think is happening, is saying, well, what we've got sucks. I want something else. Even if I don't know what the something else will lead to, at least it isn't this. And I think that's what kind of happened in all these, and even in France just yesterday. You know, things are changing. I think people are, you had to figure there'd be a cumulative effect to all this independent media we now absorb, all these world views, all this sharing and social media. At some point, this cumulative effect of self-educating will catch us up and we will win.
Tina, do me a favour. Let us know if you choose to run again. But even if you don't, come back on the programme before the election. Don't wait to be asked back on.
Absolutely.
You can follow Tina. Go ahead, Tina. Go ahead.
Just one favour of you and your listeners. There will come a day before June when the drill travels from Chesterfield in a massive convoy with escort outriders. It is a big piece of kit. And it will travel from Chesterfield to Blackpool. On that day, we will call out for as much help as we can get along that route to disrupt. And we will hope that maybe I can give you a quick call and tell you, and then perhaps you can put that out on your social media as well.
Will do, Tina. Absolutely. You can follow Tina on Twitter, by the way. It's at Tina Louise UK. At Tina Louise UK. Do follow her there. You're an absolute star. Thanks for coming back on. Brilliant chat, Tina.
Fantastic chatting to you as always, Richie. I always really enjoy this. Thank you so much.
Great chat. Thanks a lot, Tina. Bye for now. The amazing Tina Louise Rothery on the line to us there from Blackpool. When Tina gets in touch with me, we'll tweet out all the details about that convoy, get people out there to show their opposition to that. Really important stuff, that is. It's exactly 30 seconds to the top of the hour. It's Tuesday's programme, The Richie Allen Show, in association with DavidIke.com, broadcasting live also on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, alternatecurrentradio.com, and TuneIn Radio. Do pay attention to Fab Radio and to Alternate Current Radio, two brilliant platforms, proud of the association with those. In a few minutes, I'll be chatting with a family whom believe their daughter was severely brain damaged by a vaccine she received without their consent some years ago. I'm talking about Bill and Pat Marchant. I think we'll be speaking with Bill. I understand Pat, his wife, has a heavy cold and isn't up to speaking. Jody was severely brain damaged by a vaccine they believe they didn't consent to it. They're fighting for justice for their daughter. They also want to mount a legal battle as well. This is important stuff, this. It really is. And it resonates with me because not having any children and hoping to have children in the future, it's something that is going to affect me and my partner, of course, Caroline, in the future, because we would not, under any circumstances, allow our child, our future child, if we're blessed with a child, to be vaccinated. And it's because of what I've come to understand in the last 8 to 9 years of doing programmes like this one. Keep those tweets coming in, lots and lots and lots of them. Great to see so much debate between our listeners on Twitter, and great to see that it's robust, but it's very, very respectful as well. Look, I understand a lot of our listeners will go and vote on the 8th of June, and I understand a lot of our listeners are committed to voting for Jeremy Corbyn, and at no time have I ever tried to dissuade anybody from doing what it is they believe is right. I've never said that. I've never attempted to belittle anybody. I've never questioned anybody's mental aptitude, their intellectual capacity, their intelligence. I've never done anything like that. That isn't me. I concluded what I concluded. I hold it dear. I believe it to be absolutely true, but I have no I do not look down upon or think I am better than somebody who believes something different. Am I disappointed that after 2.5 years of listening to this programme, that some of our listeners believe that Jeremy Corbyn could make a difference? I am, I suppose. I am. I'd be a liar if I said I wasn't. I am disappointed. I'm saddened by the fact that people still think they can change the system by acquiescing to the system. But I don't think any less of anybody. I don't think I'm any smarter. I concluded what I concluded. You are entitled to believe whatever it is you believe. We'll be back in a minute with more.
Virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
We intend to show everyone the real reason children are being removed at an alarming rate.
No, this is awful.
The baby's not been seen by the dots or nothing.
They are psychopathic.
They have got the legal right to kill children now, because that's what they do.
Traffic 2. Available now at premiumonpictures.co.uk.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. they become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Join in tonight's discussion by tweeting at Richie Allen Show now.
Welcome back to the program. Dr. Catherine Horton, PhD, I think will be among the guests tomorrow, Wednesday. Looking forward to catching up with her. She came on the program to talk about gang stalking several months ago. We were the first people she reached out to, came on the program, spoke with us for over 90 minutes. Fascinating. And very, very, very disturbing conversation. I think Catherine will be back on with us tomorrow. Tweet me at Richie Allen Show. Email Richie at richieallen.co.uk. Time to take some more music. Got some Simply Red lined up. This is Simply Red. He says, taking a big swallow of water. Europe's most listened to independent radio show. This is your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com and elsewhere. Simply Red and Sunrise, back with more after this.
As I look into your eyes, I see the sunrise. The light behind your face helps me realize. We sleep and sometimes love until the moon shines. Maybe the next time I'll be yours and maybe you'll be mine.
Red and Sunrise, welcome back to the programme, The Richie Allen Show. It's exactly 7.5 minutes past the hour. Now, Christina England is a great friend of ours. She is a journalist and author. She's been on the programme several times as Christina. And she recently published an article in Health Impact News, which was also published on vaccineimpact.com. And it's about the Marchant family. The story's a terrifying story, it really is, and it's about the consequences of a vaccination given to a young child called Jodie. I'm going to read the first couple of paragraphs of this, and then we're going to speak with Bill Marchant. Have a listen to this. On May 17th, 1993, Mr. and Mrs. Marchant took their daughter Jodie to the doctor for her 14-month checkup. Jodie was fit and healthy and meeting all her milestones, so her parents agreed for her to be vaccinated with the MMR vaccination, a decision that will haunt them forever. Mr. Marchant explained to us what happened the moment that Jodie received her vaccination. Jodie let out a high-pitched scream and appeared to be in a state of shock. Her eyes became vacant, as if in a trance, and she appeared to lose interest in eating and refused all food, and we had to resort to giving her milkshakes. Jodie didn't recognise anyone for a long time. Note, in 1997, her then GP was able to confirm that Jodie was okay prior to vaccination, and this confirms the records were available when the GP inspected them. Jodie stopped movement and would sit on the sofa rocking with eyes rolling and stopped talking. It appears, writes Christina England, that instead of receiving the MMR vaccine as agreed, Jodie received a mystery vaccination because, according to her medical records, she received a combination of the following vaccination: diphtheria, tetanus, DT, polio, pertussis, and the MMR11. And the consequences, it would appear, were catastrophic for Jodie. I'm joined on the line right now by Jodie's father, Bill Marchant. And we might hear from Pat, but I understand Pat has a heavy cold and is finding it difficult to speak. Bill, you are very welcome to this programme. Thanks for taking the call.
Yeah, we received a card for the MMR and took Jodie up for, after a lot of discussion. The records confirmed she received, as you say, the MMR2, the DTNP, oral polio in a vaccine, and hip titer. We didn't find this out for several years, and the doctor that actually gave us the information was sacked immediately out there.
The doctor was sacked?
And the records removed.
Pat, tell me, when...
Sorry?
The symptoms and the problems with Jodie, they began immediately after the vaccination.
Immediately, she let out a... I wasn't actually in the room when Pat took Jodie, and even though, because I'm pretty hard of hearing, I heard a massive, very, very high-pitched scream, realised it was Jodie, and as I moved, Pat came storming out of the room and said she'd never go in there again. Yet Jodie was damaged. The syringe was already made up, so Pat couldn't see what went into it anyway. And, you know, we were just totally shocked to find out the action.
Tell me about the significance of the dose having been already made up. This is very significant, this. Explain this, Pat. Excuse me, Bill.
Yeah, you, Pat. Can you just answer that one up?
It's all about the dose.
I think Pat's going to come on the phone now. Pat, welcome to the programme.
I can't hear it, Pat. Sorry.
Hello?
Pat, welcome to the programme. How are you?
Pat, yeah.
Hello?
Hi,
yes,
Pat. Hi.
Hello?
Hi, Pat. You're very welcome to the programme. Can you hear us?
Yeah. I can hear you.
Marvellous. Well, listen, thanks for coming on the programme. Bill was just explaining that the effect felt by Jodie was absolutely instant, Pat. Tell us about that. It happened immediately.
Yeah. I went into the room and they vaccinated her straight away. The needle was already done. Then she let out a high-pitched scream. She started shaking, shivering, and she had a temperature, everything, and that. So, and she was staring and that. And I thought we lost her that day, but we didn't, thank goodness.
Now, tell me this, Pat. Because the bad reaction was so immediate, did the doctor say anything or mention anything about the reaction that Jodie had? You must have asked questions of the doctor. You must have said, why has this happened? Is this normal? Explain this to us.
We actually rang the surgery about it, and she had a temperature and things like that. I didn't explain nothing to us. They didn't want to explain anything to us. All they said, give her a Calpol all the time and that. And we was left alone with a special needs child, and she stopped eating. She went very skinny. She had ulcers right through her body. She had bowel problems. And her speech is gone, completely in that. And she got hearing problems as well. And she walks on tiptoes. All these problems that Jodie's following after the vaccination and that. You know, it's terrible for what happened.
She was a year and a half old at that time. Yes.
14 and a half months.
14 and a half months. And she was absolutely perfect. She was a normal, happy baby, right?
Yeah, she's meeting everything. And automatically, after that vaccination, well, I call it a cocktail, went down throughout the drain at the end of the day. And I thought in England we have assault charge on the law, but they seem to hide the issue of assault charge. We've got the proof of what happened to Jodie. We've got all the paperwork and that, you know.
Because what's really important here, Pat, is that she didn't get the dose that you expected her to get. She was supposed to get the MMR jab. But I'd like you to tell us about the concerns that the doctor prepared the dose prior to your arrival at the surgery. Tell us about that and tell us why it's significant.
It was a nurse. It was a nurse who actually gave it. And what happened is I went into the room. The needle was already done. She was back of me. I was at the back. And she put some stuff up that I usually do from the needle and turned round and she put it into Jodie very roughly. And I stopped. I said, "Stop being rushed." And suddenly, all the problems started. High pitched scream, shivering, shaking, temperature, everything. We had to fight for help. I had to threaten police to get help, and that. When I mentioned police, some help started to get on medical help. It took a long time, but we got a little bit of medical help in that. They wasn't going to look at Jodie at all.
And the record shows that she received vaccinations for diphtheria, for tetanus, for polio, for pertussis, and for the MMR11, but she only received one jab, right?
Yeah, she only had one jab.
One jab.
All in the needle, and the cocktail was all in there. I didn't know what's in that needle. You know, I didn't know. I thought it was just the MMR, nothing else. And that, with the mixture that Jodie had, it shouldn't have gone in like that.
And you, what's extraordinary, Pat, is that you've got proof of this. The proof is there in the record.
Yeah, that's right. We've got the proof of paperwork for what happened to Jodie. We've got the VAC numbers, everything. And we've been fighting this for years to try and get some justice. And the lawyers over here, the solicitors and the barristers are crooked over here. They just seem to stop us to get to court.
Your healthy 14-month-old daughter went to get a vaccination for MMR. The vaccine had already been prepared before you arrived. She was given one single jab. You thought for MMR, but you later found out she was given all these other vaccinations in the single jab. And the effect of this on young Jodie was immediate and it was catastrophic. Now, I want you to tell us, Pat, about, you said you've been battling for years, and I know you have been battling for years. Tell us about, go back to the beginning. How did you begin? What did you do to try and find out what happened? How did you try to get answers for Jodie? What was the process you went through?
What happened is we had a doctor ring here, Dr. Greenland, and she actually asked us to go up to see her we gave up the ghost of getting no help. We had an awful problem. She wasn't eating, she wasn't sleeping. I thought we were going to lose her, actually. And automatically she said, I'm here to help you. And we sort of listened to her, and we went up to see her. I explained what happened to Jodie.
You thought it was just MMR 2.
You thought it was MMR 2. And Dr. Greenland told us it wasn't only...
Yeah, you explain.
You explain
the rest. I'll explain a little bit better than that. When, as we say, for a long time we were searching, you know, trying to find out what was wrong. And it is believed, according to Dr. Fletcher, that the needle actually went into a small artery and would have delivered it straight to the brain within seconds. You know, this is why there was immediate reaction. We weren't aware of anything added to it for 5 years. And that's when suddenly we were asked for a urine sample by Dr. Shattuck. We sent a urine sample to Sunderland, and he came back and he said, you're not telling me anything. You know, there's something missing. Apparently, we then went to try to get the batch numbers. At first, the MMR was missing, and we were told she had the DPT and polio, which we'd never dreamed she'd had. But then it came out, Dr. Green said, go and get the batch numbers for the MMR, because that is what she had as well. And so at first we thought it was 7. Our MP actually supported us, alongside the health minister at the time. They fully supported us and tried to get to the bottom of it all. But unfortunately, it was well covered and there was no records. They'd remove them. And
Bill, can I? Bill, let me stop you there. This is important to the story. The records that went missing. What was the explanation given as to the reason the records were no longer there?
Basically, we weren't given any explanation whatsoever. As a matter of fact, we received a phone call from the surgery, and it said there had been an accident and Jodie's records were burned.
My God.
But they hadn't been burned. Sarah Nethercott, a nurse, had been instructed to take them over to a place called Jigsaw, where they deal with disabled children. And we didn't know. All we knew was that the records were gone. And finally, when the law came out where we were able to put back in for them, they charged me £50 to go and get the records. So we lost that way. But in the meantime, you know, with Jodie, we tried everything, you know, to try to stop it. And we met a mother whose son was damaged and showed similar symptoms to Jodie. And she suggested we contact London Andy Wakefield to try to get him looked at. She said it's all connected here to the MMR. That's what her son had. And we went there and saw Professor Walker Smith, who immediately said this child is different from the other children we've been looking at. So because of the condition of her, which we were told by the local hospital there wasn't much wrong, he said that he could not do anything. He gave her medicine to clear her stomach out because she was totally blocked up solid with constipation. And they then looked at her and found that she had ulcers, etc., in her esophagus. And, from there, it was all sort of hard work, or, you know, trying to get her better. But if it hadn't been for Dr. Shattuck, or Paul Shattuck, we wouldn't have known the extra vaccines and Jenny Green then.
But when we went to see her next, she was gone. I'd sacked her.
I just want to do a recap there, Bill, if that's okay. I just want to remind our listeners what we're talking about. Bill and Pat Marchant are on the line. They have a beautiful daughter, Jodie, and they took Jodie to get an MMR jab back in 1993. She was 14 months old. That's what was supposed to happen. In fact, there was a vaccine already made up before they arrived, and they later found out that far from the MMR jab, the dose included vaccinations for diphtheria, tetanus, DT, polio, pertussis, and MMR11. The impact on Jodie was immediate and it was instant, and she had terrible health complications after that.
Yeah.
What we've learned from talking with Bill and Pat, and from the article that Christina England wrote, Christina put me on to Bill and Pat, is that there's been a cover-up all along here, and in their efforts to find out what happened to Jodie, doctors have suggested to Bill and to Pat that the administering of the injection itself, let alone the ingredients, but the administration of the vaccine could well have been catastrophic, may have hit an artery and delivered that cocktail of vaccinations directly to her brain. They've been fighting for years to get justice for what happened to her. Pat, Bill described there how records were kept withheld from the family deliberately, how people were fired to keep this a secret. Do us a favour, Bill. Tell us about Jodie's health today. What sort of quality of life does Jodie have? What is life like for her? Describe her condition, if you can, please.
Yeah. At the moment in time, Jodie finger feeds. She cannot eat with a knife or fork. She cannot use... We cannot give her a normal plate or a cup or a glass because she will drink or throw it, you know. She has some... She's doubly incontinent, which means, you know, she's in nappies 24 hours a day. She has no speech whatsoever, no awareness of danger. She had seizures. There seems to be a problem with her ears, but no one can actually determine what it is. She holds her ears an awful lot. She toe walks. No, she doesn't like going out very much. And she's happier in her bedroom watching television like rugby or something like that. Or her only thing, if she's walking around, she's normally holding a toy telephone upside down and pressing the buttons to hear the noises. The damage to her brain is such, or left hand side of her brain is such that stem cells or other treatment would not be beneficial to her because it's too badly damaged. She will fall over. She had seizures and fell over in the garden and knocked her teeth out. And we've also got to be very, very careful because she's fallen down the stairs a few times. One time there, we thought she was dead. There's blood all over her face, etc., etc. She had a broken nose, teeth knocked out. You know, bruises here, bruises there. And at night now, it means that when she's in bed, we have to put a light on and bolt it so that she can't get out. She has no use for money. She doesn't accept or appreciate presents or toys. She doesn't know what Christmas or a birthday is.
I'm so sorry to hear that, Bill. And I do mean that. It isn't a hollow sentiment. I'm listening to that. It must be devastating for you and Pat, and to have a beautiful, and she's beautiful. I've seen photographs of Jodie, recent photographs, and she's gorgeous.
Yeah.
You know, she's a smashing looking kid, but to have those problems, And it can't be, you know, when you rule out everything else and you're left with the inevitable, the vaccination and the immediate effect it had on her, that is, it's undeniable that this is the reason why she's ill. Yeah, go ahead.
Dr. Fletcher, who's very, very, very highly qualified, said that with the timing of the, you know, the disability, within a minute of her being injected, you cannot look at anything else other than the vaccine. This was also supported by Dr. Mark Geer of America, who they paid to, you know, he was commissioned to do a report on Jodie and asked if he could do a small unintrusive test before he finished it. He was absolutely convinced Jodie was vaccine damaged. They refused him and paid him.
Let me make something known. Some of our listeners won't know this, but the UK government has a vaccine damage payment programme.
Yeah.
I'm going to, now I know you know all about this, Bill. I'm going to read three lines. It's the overview of the gov.uk / vaccine damage payment. If you're severely disabled as a result of a vaccination against certain diseases, you could get a one-off tax-free payment of £120,000. This is called a vaccine damage payment. Now, one of the...
Can I comment on that?
Go ahead, Bill, because I was going to ask you about it. Go ahead.
Yeah. When we found out about it and applied for it, we were told by the vaccine damage unit that they accepted she was vaccine damaged, but we needed to take her up for the appeal so that they could examine her. Because, you know, they didn't feel she was sufficiently damaged. Now, we took her up for the appeal. They refused to look at her, saying quite clearly she would meet any criteria. My son, who was up there as a witness as well, was asked to look after her while they discussed it with us. Now, they discussed it with us and they were trying to get us to say that Jodie was damaged by the DPT. At that time, the hip tighter was not known. And they made it quite clear that if we accepted that and agreed that she was damaged by it, we would get payment. I refused because that was not... We'd found out then that Jodie had extra jabs and we all in one and that we refused to accept anything other than the action that was given, you know, given to Jodie. So they then, after that, they said, okay, you can go, we know, fair enough. We thought actually we'd won it because we did receive a letter later from them to say that they'd reverse their decision. But there was nothing in there. When I asked for the check where it was, they said they'd made a mistake. And Paul was not vaccine damaged.
Now you... That Paul wasn't vaccine damaged.
They said, having examined Jodie's files, they'd come to the decision that Paul was not vaccine damaged and they couldn't pay him. So, you know, I've got this in there and all them writing... And, you know, we just couldn't make it out.
You still have all of this correspondence, right?
Yes.
So they sent you a letter saying Jodie's brother wasn't vaccine damaged.
Yeah.
But that's insane. Jodie's brother doesn't have anything to do with it. Jodie
was... There was another thing which I forgot to tell you, sorry about this, was that when the decision, they actually looked up and said, oh, I'm sorry, but we've been looking at the wrong file number. And Jodie's files is actually, or number is actually a different one, you know. So we were left sort of shaking our heads a little bit.
At the very beginning, when you went to see these people, they didn't examine Jodie because they said it was obvious. that she was vaccine damaged. They didn't need to examine her, and they were happy to accept.
Can I just point there?
Yeah.
When we first applied, we only applied for the MMR because that's all we thought went into her.
You didn't know, of course, that diphtheria had gone in, tetanus had gone in, MMR11 had gone in. Your family have been treated disgracefully, Bill. Bill, can I ask you this? And I know you love your daughter, so don't take this the wrong way. She's no burden to you. You'll always love her and you'll always look after her. But is there a financial burden? I mean, you've got to care for her, right? I don't know how to phrase this without sounding insensitive. Is it difficult financially? Yeah, go ahead.
On the 31st of July 2013, we had to go for an appeal in Brighton to face the LSE appointed committee, who unanimously agreed that Jodie should have funding restored and our case should continue. The solicitor representing us took the wrong files in a carrier bag and was unable to answer any questions, which, you know, was strange. But what he also never told them was that the identity of the nurse, which they said, you know, should the nurse be found and identified, then it is likely that no one would believe a word she said, having carried out that action. But we had the nurse's identity then, the 8th vaccine, and our solicitor would not tell them or notify them of this. He said that there was a doctor on board that he wanted to get the report from. This is why he asked for 20,000, which he got. The doctor that should have been on board was never agreed to go on board. And our doctor, who was helping us pro bono, Dr. Fletcher, who was far, far, far more superior qualified, was totally ignored. So it just doesn't make sense. All the way through, you know, there have been lies and covers up. And having agreed and given us the 20,000, we changed solicitors because of the action of that one. And the latest one, the legal funding was there, just a simple matter case, you know, of looking at the issues, you know, lack of consent, totally opened the case wide open and left us with nothing to prove, as the action was never likely to be repeated.
Bill, tell me this. Did you just say that the incompetent lawyer charged you £20,000?
Well, charged you legal-wise, yeah.
You didn't have to pay that, though, did you? Legal aid covered that, right?
Yeah, they covered that, yeah. But, having agreed that we had a strong case, you know, why did our own solicitors go against us and block it? Stop us from doing anything? And the barrister, Adam Corn.
Do you think there was...
Dr. Bellman said that he's not qualified to give an opinion on this mixture, what would happen, and we needed an immunologist, which was never asked for and never got. The barrister said, if you went for the MMR and the needle contained the MMR, it doesn't matter what else went into it, it is still MMR, you lost your case, sort of thing. They wouldn't back us, even though the LSC had given us the funding. You know, that left us scratching our heads. And why was a doctor like Dr. Fletcher totally, utterly ignored, who was far, far superior and was working pro bono?
I wonder, through this journey, this difficult time that you've had over the years, have you and Pat encountered the parents of other children whom were similarly damaged as Jodie was? Have you met other people, Bill?
We've had some straight people getting in touch with that. But we've never come across anyone that's had, which turned out to be an 8-in-1. And we had, at one time, when we started making inquiries, I started getting death threats on my computer, you know, like, similar to William, beware, doctors can kill without warning, so be very careful, that sort of thing. You know, and we've totally ignored it.
People sending you death threats on the internet. My God.
Yeah, we actually reported it to the police, but they said they couldn't trace it.
You know, about 3 years ago, I interviewed a woman in New York. I'm sure you've heard of her. A woman called Alyssa Nethery. And Alyssa's baby was given 13 doses in a single day. God love him, and died shortly after. And I'm thinking, and I'm not trying to be dramatic, I'm thinking Jodie is lucky to be alive, I think, isn't she, Bill? She's lucky to have survived that.
There's much shock that she's still alive. I mean, we've had to face here. A little while ago, they tried to, well, September the 1st, they tried to pin a sexual abuse charge on us at the day centre. And we had to blow that away. I mean, they've tried since, you know, to... I believe that they've been trying very, very hard to get Jodie. Not for because she needs something, but for research purposes. I mean, during the course of the damaged time, we've had numerous requests for research, like King's College, Newcastle, Liverpool. But unless it's for Jodie's benefit, we don't want her research. We just don't trust them anymore.
And it could be a very stressful thing for Jodie anyway. I totally understand that. But I mean,
when they took up the hospital there September the 1st, we got a phone call to say that Jodie had been rushed to A&E. And we went rushed up there and we found security blokes blocking us there. They wouldn't let us see her, wouldn't let us in or anything. Then the police arrived. And it was hours later when we were allowed in to get Jodie, or allowed in there, and the doctor there said there's absolutely nothing wrong with her whatsoever. You know, not in terms of abuse or that. She's perfectly well looked after. Well done, Pat, they said, you know. They praised Pat up for the way she's looking after Jodie. And talk about disappointment. The people that were trying it, we're clearly disappointed with that. And recently, we had a 2-day notice to take her up to the general hospital for a checkover by Dr. Stroud. And we went up there, and apparently this was research. And he looked at Jodie, and he didn't examine her or anything. He said, this child is very, very, or what young lady is very well looked after. And as far as I'm concerned, why they've been pressuring me to get her looked at, I don't know, he said, because clearly the mum is doing absolutely everything right. So, I mean, you know, we're facing that as well.
How stressful, Bill, how stressful was it to be accused in September of sexually assaulting your own daughter? I mean, you know, you dealt with that very swiftly. And put that, you know, and dealt with those people who made those claims. But considering everything you've been through anyway as a couple and as a family, it doesn't get any more serious than that. How did you cope with that?
Well, being absolutely honest, it's very, very hard work. But, I mean, when she comes over to take her for a ride in the car, she likes her rides around the forest at night, you know, to see the animals and that. The deer, like, running across the road. Well, we think she likes it, but she'll give us her coat or shoe to take her out. And then when we come back, I always get a kiss from her. Now, it seems as if she understands and thanking us. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Pat, there could not be a better mother. It's not there.
Tell me this, Pat. Bill, we've got Bill and Pat Marchant on the line. Their daughter, Jodie, was given 8 vaccinations in 1993 in one dose. She was supposed to be given the MMR jab. It's devastated her health. The family have been battling for years to get justice and to get answers as to why that happened. For somebody to take responsibility for doing that to their daughter. It's been an incredible battle. There's a GoFundMe page and it's called Justice for Jodie. If you go to GoFundMe.com and if you put Justice for Jodie in there, you'll see the campaign. You're trying to raise £25,000, Bill.
Well, we
tell me about that.
We don't really know, you know, what the cost will be, but at the moment, you know, I'm pretty certain that if we can only get the court to court, they would back up because we're holding records that would stand up anywhere. I mean, the letter from Professor Walker Smith and Dr. Greenland. Jodie making a noise now. You know, Jodie developed perfectly normal until 14 and a half months when everything went wrong. You know, absolutely pinpointing the vaccine. Our witnesses, you know, that actually, should we say, knew Jodie very, very well and were there when this happened. The immediate reaction. They've never been called, never been used.
Never been deposed
in,
or
you know,
recorded.
To give evidence.
Yeah. So tell
I mean,
me this, Bill.
Statements,
tell me this, because you've got all the paperwork. Christina's article is excellent. It's incredibly well detailed. You've got all of this information, all the proof that you need. You now need the money to employ a barrister. Whom are you suing? Are you suing the NHS? Are you suing the doctor involved? Are you suing all parties? Tell us about that.
Well, I'm glad you said that because recently I tried to get a letter of claim from the NHS. You know, to notify them, to give them the opportunity of sitting around a table. Well, at first, they agreed with that sort of thing. You know, you need a solicitor, really. But we couldn't get a solicitor. But I paid to speak to a barrister who told me that I could do it myself. So I then sent the NHS a letter to say, well, look, I'm going to issue a letter of claim and I will deal with it myself. So they then sent it to London to their litigation authority, you know, giving them the information, who came back to me and said, look, you know, after a long, long telephone conversation and, say, paperwork, they said, it's very clear the doctor should be charged and their insurers, you know, made to pay. You can't blame the NHS for what a doctor done.
Hang on a second, Bill. You're right to say that. The NHS can't be demonised for what a doctor did, but the NHS has to answer for the fact that you and Pat and Jodie have had to put up with this for what? For 14 years now. That's unacceptable. And the NHS must take responsibility for that. You know, the honourable thing should have been done.
On this year, it was 24 years.
24? What's wrong with me? 24 years. Not 14, 24 years. 24 years.
That's 17th of May this year.
So they are accountable. They have to answer for nearly a quarter of a century of lies, of cover-ups, of obfuscation. It's an untenable position for the National Health Service. So you're trying to raise money to basically pay for your legal fees for these people to be taken to court. So the GoFundMe page, just go to GoFundMe.com and Justice for Jodie will get you to the page there. I don't know what to say to you, Bill. I can't imagine what you've gone through. You and Pat and Jodie. I don't know what to say to you. I mean, this is obviously a grave miscarriage of justice here. There's no two ways about this. All the evidence. I've seen the evidence. You know, you've been, I can't believe it, 24 years.
Yeah, 24 years. And as I said, you know, you would think the authorities would look up and say, look, this is totally out of order. We do not hold in with it. And let them act, you know, that doctor should be pulled in instead of that. She's in luxury somewhere, you know, probably done the same thing 1,000 times over. And, you know, well, where should we say here? I mean, I lost my job, my house, everything. You know, just when journey went wrong, we had to look after 24 hours a day, and we still do.
I did touch on that earlier on, and I didn't want to be insensitive, because you love your daughter, and you'll always take care of her, but it is a significant financial burden, isn't it? It's not. It's difficult financially to care for somebody.
Yeah, I believe that. I'm confident in myself that having faced the appeals committee down in Brighton, I had to take over because of the quality of our legal advisor, and we got through unanimously. I'm totally convinced that should we be able to issue proceedings, they would fold up and want to settle this very, very quietly. But, as I said, at the moment, they're, you know, it's a bit of a slog, to say the least.
You've got to imagine the reason why you've had to put up with this, you and Pat and Jody, is because they are scared the floodgates will open, because there must be other young women and young men like Jody. There must be, Bill. You know, it stands to reason, in a country of 60 million people, there are other Jodys out there, no doubt about it.
I believe we're the only one that holds all the records necessary, you know, can prove it. I mean, on their own medical records, their clinic records, they state on there, limited consent, you know, and they've named 5 vaccines on there. They're limited to what, to them. Now, with the 8 given, that's 3 that's given without consent, even on their own records. But the limited consent was not signed by anyone, certainly not us. We didn't know anything about it. And we're told by the, you say the legal panel told us, it is not worth the paper it's written on. And should you reach court, any judge would be very, very suspicious as to how and why they kept the records in this condition.
Do you know what they call it in America? They call it a slam dunk, Bill. You know, if it gets in front of a judge, even if it got in front of a jury, it is a slam dunk. Jodie's health was destroyed by that cocktail of vaccinations given by the incompetent doctor. There's no two ways about it. And they've covered it up for a quarter of a century. They've lied, they've cheated, you've been threatened online, allegations were made about you that are untrue. It's untenable. It's the sort of thing you shouldn't need to be on this programme, this independent programme. This should be on Panorama or Dispatches. It's disgusting.
We were filmed, actually, for Channel 4, MMR. We were filmed for 3 days by them, Brian Deere, the journalist, etc. That was, I cannot prove this. He had the files of the Royal Pre-Hospital with him. He totally slacked down Mrs. Isabel Thomas and her 2 boys. He slagged Andy Wakefield down and said that he's a mummy's boy who needs his bum smacked, sort of thing, you know, and if his mummy told him to do something, he would do it. But that was nothing to do with what he come down for us for. What he told us he wanted to see Jody to get medical help for her, and if necessary, you know, to approach the government to see what they're doing to the children. But he had no intentions whatsoever of doing that.
And Bill,
when he sat down on the chair in the garden and started screaming because he was in the wrong chair, Pat wanted to throw him out, and Jody was had she'd had a gastric band fit because of acid burning ulcers. and the band was too tight, so what she was eating came back up again. And he sat there like a weirdo, saying, oh, let her play in the sick, let her play in the sick. That's what I'll let you play in the bloody sick. And, you know, he wasn't what he pretended to be at all. But he did say, Andy Wakefield is right. He's just not the right doctor to say it, and it's too early.
Bill, we're just about out of time. I want to sincerely wish you all the very best, you and Pat and Jody. Yeah. Look, we'll stay in touch, and whenever there's any developments, I've shared the GoFundMe page on Twitter, and our listeners are sharing it now and retweeting it and all of that jargon to get it out there for people. Whenever there's any development at all, stay in touch with me, stay in touch with Christina England, and we'll get you back on the programme. Do me a favour and thank Pat for speaking to us tonight as well. And give Jody
a hug.
Thank
you very much for taking and listening.
No, mate, no, it's this. Yeah, people have to hear this. Look after yourself, Bill, and thanks for coming on. Bye for now. That was Bill Marchant there on the line. You heard his wife, Pat, earlier, and I think we could hear Jody pottering about in the background there. Christina England, the journalist and author, a friend of ours, has been on the programme before. She put me in touch with the story. I've tweeted out Christina's story, which was on vaccineimpact.com and Health Impact News as well. A family whose daughter was destroyed physically by a cocktail of vaccinations, having been told she was going to get the MMR, was given 8 in one go, diphtheria and tetanus amongst them, immediately began screaming, went into her shell, lost the power of speech, horrendous problems with her esophagus, with her dietary tract, her intestinal tract, movement, speech, everything. And for years, for nearly a quarter of a century, despite those people working for the government through the vaccine damage payment scheme, accepting that the young woman, the young baby as she was then, was vaccine damaged, despite doctors coming forward and saying the administration, the administering of the vaccine was wrong and badly handled, shot those toxins into the brain of the baby, despite everything, they're no nearer today getting an apology, getting an exception of culpability, an acknowledgement of culpability, accepting of responsibility by anybody at the NHS, the doctors involved. It's one of the worst stories I've ever read, to be honest. When Christina sent it to me late last week and I read it yesterday, I can't believe it. I believe it because it's true, because I've seen the evidence. But this is the world we live in. You know, speaking to Tina earlier on, speaking to Piers Corbyn yesterday, about trusting the establishment, about voting your way out of this tyranny. Think again. Chris Piper sent an email in there at the last minute. Richie, what a horrendous story. I would have wept for Pat and Bill, says Chris. I still might. Chris Piper there, long-time listener to the programme. Thanks to you for all your tweets as well. I've nothing else to say. We'll be back tomorrow, the usual time of 7 p.m. BST. Until then, bye for now.